Welcome to HIT Consultant Podcast Series. In this podcast, we will be speaking with Alan Brill, Senior Managing Director at Kroll Incorporated. Today's topic will be about the importance of security log management and analysis in healthcare organizations. This is part one to a two-part series. Interested in sponsoring a podcast? Please contact us at www.hitconsultant.net.
So, according to Verizon's 2011 data breach investigation report, it says that less than 1% of breaches analyzed were discovered through log analysis, and while 69% of those breaches were detectable via log evidence. So why are healthcare organizations not maintaining their logs?
Well, that's a really interesting statistic when you think about it. 69% of the breaches could have been detected with information in the logs, but only 1% were actually discovered by looking at the logs. What that indicates is that in 68% of the breaches, if there had been logs and those logs had been reviewed, the breach would have been caught. It would have been caught sooner. It would have been caught and understood far better. So the question is, how do you get a number like that? You get a number because most organizations haven't really thought about logging in any organized sense for a long time, maybe years. And things have changed. You know, where years ago, people would say, well, we can only keep logs for a day or a couple of days at most because they take so much room and space is so expensive. That's what you'd hear. But today, space isn't that expensive. Large amounts of storage don't end up costing you necessarily a great deal. And it is time to rethink what we log, how we log it, how we maintain those logs, and how we use those logs. I think the real answer to that, to your question, is in part because healthcare organizations haven't really focused on the value equation that is associated with those logs. If you think of them as just being something for IT to use in case there's a problem, you start to ask that question, you know, yeah, how much is it worth to us? But once you recognize that those logs can be of enormous value in a breach, and perhaps we'll go through one or two examples to show exactly what that value can be, and once you say that, it's a whole different ballgame. Now, those logs may have strategic importance to the business in determining whether a breach occurred, if a breach occurred, how serious it was, how it has to be reported. So I think the message I get from that part of the report is an indication of the enormous value that good logging can have in dealing with potential or actual breaches.
Okay. And what are some of the best practices for log analysis as a data security tool?
The first thing is to log, is to have the logs turned on. I can't tell you how many times our teams come in when something terrible has happened, and one of the first things we say is, let's grab the logs, let's preserve them. And we talk to the IT people, and they say, well, unfortunately, we turned off most of the logs. And eventually you say why, and they say things like too much space, didn't really see a value to them. So I think the first practice is to have logs turned on where it's practical, where they should be turned on, and to maintain them for a long enough period that they're likely to be useful if you discover a security incident or a potential breach. You then have to have the ability to take the logs and to do something with them, to analyze them, to bring them together from disparate parts of the organization, to be able to get a picture of what's going on as a whole. So the process that we look at is log consolidation, log preservation, and then log analysis. And for each of these, there are tools, both open source and commercial, that you can use to make this process an easier one for your technology staff. But you have to start with the best practice for log analysis as being have logs that you can analyze and have at least simple tools to help you go through the logs so that you can turn a massive amount of raw data into what we generally refer to as actionable intelligence. It tells you something in a way that you can do something about it. If you're suddenly getting, for example, in a log, an awful lot of inquiries or hits or accesses from a part of the world that you just don't do business in, that may be something that's worth taking a look at. You may find data going out that you didn't expect. That's certainly worth knowing. So there are a whole range of things that you can do with log analysis, from looking at what's coming in and going out of the organization to looking for unusual patterns. And the best practice really requires you to figure out for your particular institution, how can the logs become useful? In some cases where there are a lot of resources, you may be able to do a lot of proactive analysis. In smaller institutions, you may be more limited. You may be primarily maintaining those logs in case there is an incident, in case there is a need for them. So there's no magic single solution, but the first thing to do is make sure you're getting the logs, keeping them for a long enough period, and that you know what you are and are not logging.
And you mentioned simple tools. What simple tools are you referring to?
There are a number of tools. Generally, because of the range of technologies that people use, from different operating systems to large versus small institutions, there's no real way to give a list of specific tools that you can recommend. There are too many, and a tool that may be appropriate for one organization may be wildly inappropriate for another.
Okay. So HIPAA security rules require covered entities to regularly review information systems activity through records such as audit logs, access reports, and security incident tracking reports. What about healthcare organizations who have their systems remote hosted or in the cloud?
Well, that's the key word of today, isn't it? The cloud. We store things in the cloud. We process things in the cloud. The simplest answer to that question is that you can't let it make a difference. The law does not give you a free pass, a get-out-of-jail-free card, by saying, we store our data in the cloud. We use remote hosting. You have a responsibility under HIPAA, under high tech. And that responsibility exists regardless of the technology that you use. What that means is as healthcare institutions start making increasing use of remote computing, remote hosting, storage as a service, infrastructure as a service, all of these cloud-based constructs, you have to be sure that you're implementing those in a way that's going to be compatible with the HIPAA security rules. If, for example, you discover that there's no way to audit who had access to sensitive information, where that's a requirement because of the way a specific cloud provider works, that's not going to fly, because you can't simply go in after something bad happens, say, well, look, we wish we could have been fully compliant, but the cloud provider said they don't do things in a way that are compliant, and so that's the end of the story. Well, as you can imagine, when you go to the government with that, it's not going to be the end of the story. So, again, remember the simple rule that the technology that you employ doesn't matter. You still have to be able not only to comply with the security rules, but to be able to demonstrate that you are compliant with those security rules. Partially, this involves recognizing this as an issue before you even sign a contract to use any form of remote hosting, remote computing, or the cloud. You need to ask the questions, How are we going to be compliant? Are you compliant? Are you providing compliance tools for other healthcare providers? What are those tools? Can I talk to them? Those are the kinds of questions you need to ask. Fail to ask them because the cloud just has somehow mesmerized you into saying, wow, it's cost effective, it's easy, it takes us out of doing things that we're not really good at doing. You're on a slippery slope, and you don't want to go there.
Okay. According to a recent release, you guys, Kroll, states that data logs are your guide to detecting abnormal server activity. Can you tell me more about this and how this relates to healthcare organizations?
Sure. You know, one of the questions that you get asked almost immediately in any case where people think there's a breach is essentially what happened? What records were stolen? What records were at risk? Do we know what happened in this case? And in most situations you deal with, the answer to that is not going to be on some end user's computer. It's going to be on a server. And most often it'll be a file server, some form of processing server. Let me give you an example. We had a client who came to us and had found out that they had been the target of a successful attack. And in this particular case, the target wasn't healthcare information, it was credit card numbers. And when they looked at their file, they realized that they had about 350,000 credit cards that were at risk. And as far as their IT people were telling them, they didn't know whether one had been stolen or none had been stolen or all of them had been stolen. And as you can imagine, there's a big difference in reporting a few cards and reporting several hundred thousand cards in terms of the level of effort, in terms of the cost. What we did in that case is we went in and we were able to get logs from the server. And those server logs told us a few things. One, we could see data that was actually leaving the system. And when we looked at the data, there was what we thought of as being a very unusual pattern. And that is, as you looked at the stolen data, all the credit card numbers started with the digit 3. And we couldn't figure out why that was. Why would a successful attack only target American Express products? So what we did is we were able to find the malware in the system, and we reverse engineered it. The thing we discovered was the malware, whether on purpose or by error, had inside of it a test that essentially said, if the first digit of the credit card number is a 3, steal it. If it's a 4 or a 5 or anything else, ignore it. So first thing we discovered was it wasn't 380,000 cards at risk. It was only American Express cards. And that was a huge reduction. It reduced it down to about 75,000 records. The other thing that we discovered by looking at the logs was that there appeared to be a very limited period when data was flowing out. And when we looked inside the malware, inside the virus, we discovered that, again, either purposely or because of a programming error, it had a deadline. It only operated up until a certain date, and then it stopped working. So when you added this date to the other information, we went from a need to notify over 300,000 people down to about 17,000. That's still a lot of people. But if you can think about it, that's a lot less costly, a lot less aggravating, and it's probably going to have a lot less of an impact reputationally, having 17,000 people whose data was compromised, than it would be to have almost 400,000. So there's almost always useful information in the server logs. That's why our field investigative teams always look to secure those as quickly as they get in there. And in fact, while they're on the way, we generally took our clients through the process of how they can preserve the server logs so that they're not getting overwritten, so that they're not getting accidentally erased during initial triage internally to find out what went wrong.
This concludes Part 1 with Alan Brill at Kroll Incorporated. Today's podcast series was brought to you by HIT Consultant. Thank you and have a great day.